All right. So, peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to this week's Black Wallets Matter Town Hall meeting. My name is Brother Lou, and I will be your host this evening. If this is your first time calling in, I want to run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls. So, they usually last for about 2 hours, but if we have a really good one, we can extend it. And if no one feels like participating, then we can shut it down early. So let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us tonight. So I hope you're feeling inspired and empowered because you're now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together to discuss solutions to many of the problems we face in our Black community in an organized and an intelligent manner. So if you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and as a sign of solidarity. So during these calls, there's a few topics we like to avoid, right? So we don't discuss religion, we don't discuss the Black male-female dynamic, and we do not discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it pertains to Black people and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this and which party didn't do that. The reason we don't want to discuss these topics is because they're all opinion-based, which means no one is right, no one is wrong, and we'll be here arguing, going around in circles all night and not being productive. So for all the guests on the call, and you know, if you're a guest, that means this is like your first time or you're not yet part of this organization, let me just tell you a little bit about what Black Wallets Matter is. So if you haven't watched the blueprint video that we have on our website, blackwalletsmatter.org, Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to fix the problems in our Black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the Black dollars we already have. It's estimated we spend $1.3 to $1.4 trillion a year. So if we were able to just harness a fraction of that money and pool our resources, practice group economics, we could have a major financial impact on our community and actually change things. This is a form of Black capitalism. Some people may not like the way we're faring under capitalism because we're getting the short end of the stick, but it's the only system we have here in America. And so the best thing for us to do is to get really good at understanding the rules and playing the game, right? And so that's the purpose of Black Wallets Matter. That's what the purpose of this organization is, right? We want to bring together groups of like-minded brothers and sisters who are sick and tired of the sad state of affairs in the Black community and are motivated to take action. We want brothers and sisters who believe the first step to solving our problems is unity, right? That's uniting and finding like-minded brothers and sisters and then next investing in ourselves and our people. You see, what we have here is a systematic problem. The oppression, the racism, the injustices that we face, it's baked right into the system. And so the only way we're going to fix these problems or get out of this is if we have a systematic solution. No one person, no man or woman is strong enough, has enough willpower, has enough financial resources to fight this system of oppression that we are under. It has to be a system. It has to be where all of us are moving in unison. The things that we do, the actions that we take, it is just incrementally helping and defending us, building us up as a people. That's exactly the type of, that's the system that they have working against us. So we get up in the morning and we walk outside our front doors. We put gas in our cars. We pay our tolls. We pay our taxes. We buy something from the corner store. Little fractions, little portions of that money is used to go back to fund a system that essentially oppresses Black men and women and has been doing so since this country, since before this was a country. All right? So we need to build this system. We need a plan, which this organization already has. It's laid out in our blueprint video. But more importantly, we need cooperation and organization. So we've had this plan, we've had this organization for a year, and we've had a lot of brothers and sisters who have been coming together on these calls and have been coming up with solutions and trying to, you know, figure out ways for us to get started. But the number one thing that we realize is that we're first going to have to agree that there is a problem and that we want to solve it together. No man, no single person is strong enough or has enough resources to do it on their own. I promise you, you can look back in history and it has never happened. It has never worked. The only thing that we have never tried is to try to emulate other people who have been successful under this same oppressive racist system. And if you look at the LGBT community as of late, if you look at the Jewish community, how they were persecuted here in this country, and look at where they are now. If you look at white women from in the, I want to say, the 30s, 40s, 50s, and I think maybe the 60s is when they gained their liberation or, you know, gained empowerment. If you look at what they've done, they have all, you know, threw off the oppression and the shackles of this system and to empower themselves. And the way they did it was using civil rights that were put on the books for us. The difference is they organized and they focused their energies, their talents, and their resources in one particular direction. And that's what this organization is about. This organization is first about getting those group of intrepid brothers and sisters. And then it is about setting the destination, the milestones, and it is all about us taking that first step forward together, arms locked hand in hand, you know, putting our differences aside, right, because we may not all be the same religion. We may not all be the same, you know, same political party or whatever it is. We may not all have the same sexual preference, but the bottom line is those that oppress us, they don't care about our differences. They just look at the color of our skin and they oppress us all equally. And that's the thing that, I mean, we need to understand that as a people. That's really what's happening, right? And so when I tell you Black Wallace Matter has a realistic plan for doing this, our blueprint talks about how we go from start with 2,000 founding members, right? If you look out, if you social media, if you look out in the world or whatever's going on, you will see that we have various opinions and different ways to go about our liberation, our, you know, our empowerment and all of this stuff. We want brothers and sisters to look at our blueprint and to see if it makes sense to them. If that blueprint makes sense to you, then we want you to join us. It is not going to be for everyone. We understand that. There's some things that we are saying, you know, we don't want to address, and there are certain things that we say we want to address because it's going to work in our benefit. And specifically, the things that we want to address poverty that affects, you know, single Black mothers. We want to address the unemployment and the underemployment that affects us as a people at a higher rate than it does other ethnicities. And then we want to address this racially motivated police brutality because none of us want our children to be a victim at the hands of police and then they just get away with it, right? So they just get like death duty and a paid vacation or something like that. None of us want to be on the receiving end of that. And so what this organization has realized is that we must prioritize the children. Many of us are too jaded, too set in our ways. We've been burnt and hurt by our own people to wholeheartedly try to go out and you know, to just like change our minds, right? So I can't tell you, if you've been hurt by another brother or sister, I can't tell you that Black people won't hurt you. But what we can do is we can change the experience for our babies, for the future generations. We can change it through a cultural shift, right? If the children are taught that Black men and women are trustworthy, that Black men and women don't kill each other, that Black men and women help each other, men and women, they prioritize education, they prioritize pride in their cultural heritage, they prioritize you know, business and industry and productivity and all of these different things. If you teach that to a child will embrace it. They will embrace it, and that will become their life. And that is the overall goal that this organization wants to achieve. We want to build community resource centers in every Black area that needs them. And so what a community resource center is, it's a place where at-risk black child can walk right out of their front door and have a safe place to go where they can learn some of the life skills and the educational skills that are not available to them in their immediate school system or in their immediate community. I had a conversation with a brother a couple of days ago, and I was explaining to him how I was able to see the difference of an environment, right? So I grew up in the hood. I, you know, grew up poor, you know, probably unlike many of you, right? Same story. And then through determination and a plan and all these other things, I was able to, you know, make something of myself and able to have something. And so now where I live and where I raise my children, it is a drastic difference. Now I still go back to the hood because I still got family there. I still, you know, have a place there and all of that other stuff. And I'm noticing the difference. I'm noticing the difference between when there are no opportunities, there are no extracurricular opportunities or activities for these children. I'm looking at how they develop differently. And our children are worth that investment. That's realistically how we're going to change the plight of Black America. It's not going to happen in one decade. It may take a generation or two. A generation is 20 years. So it may take 20. It may take 40. It may take 100. The system that they have oppressed us with, they've been working and honing and perfecting this system for hundreds of years. Hundreds. They have a track record of it. They've studied us. And I don't know how you guys feel about this, and I don't know if you take offense, but to be honest with you, they know us better than we know ourselves. They study us as they study us under microscopes and know our and know the moves we're going to make before we make them. That's why they're able to implement things like the war on drugs, and that's how they know they can bring a bunch of drugs and a bunch of guns into the neighborhood and leave, you know, on trains and leave them open and know that we'll go in there and we'll take to the drugs and we'll take to the guns and, you know, we'll do whatever. They know something about us that we don't know about ourselves. And we have to start taking control of our own destiny. We have to start taking control of our own empowerment. It is the only way. No one is coming to save us. No one. We have to save ourselves. And for many of us, those who are in the position to do so, those who can, we need to do for those who can't. We need to put the opportunity, we need to make the opportunity widely available. There is some single mother struggling somewhere who wants to do better but don't have the resources. She doesn't have the money. She probably doesn't have a babysitter. She probably doesn't have the support from her baby father. She probably doesn't have the support from her mother. She's just sitting there stressed out, and the bottom line is those babies need to eat right now. So she has these two forces pulling her. I got to do better for my kids, and I want to do better for myself. That sister needs help. And that community resource center should be there for her. She needs to walk in and, okay, sister, what's going on? Take her into intake processing, sit down, figure out what's going on. If we have to provide food and meals for those children, then that's what we have to do. If we have to provide insurance or something like that, then that's what we have to do. And the reason how I know this can work is there's a gentleman by the name of Jeffrey Canada. He created something called the Harlem's Children's Home. I'm assuming every single person on this call know about Harlem, know what kind of area that is and was back in the days. That man came and changed, I don't know exactly how many blocks or how many miles it was, but he literally went into that community and changed things. And one of the major things that he did was he provided resources for the parents, because he realized that if the parent doesn't have the resources that he or she needs to support the child when the child comes home from this from the school, they're not going to get the positive reinforcement. So he built something and it worked. Now, there are other models out there. A perfect example, you can look at the Jewish community, what they do with their yeshiva schools. They, if anyone is from the city, I don't know how the Jewish community looks in any of these other cities, but I know in New York, if you're in New York City, you'll see the Jewish people will be smack dab in the hood. You will be riding houses will be broken down, sidewalks will be broken down, and then, like, as soon as you cross the street, it's like the sidewalks are straightened and the houses are well kept, and then there's like these big gleaming buildings, and those are yeshiva schools. And what they do is they send their kids right into those schools, and the kids spend the vast majority of the day in those schools while the parents are out working, doing what they're doing. And when those children are in this school, they're learning about Jewish culture, they're learning about finances, and they're learning skills and trades. They're learning things that are going to make them employable and, more importantly, useful to their own community. The example is there. We can use that same example. We don't have to have an attitude. We don't even need to bump our heads trying to figure this stuff out. It's right there. The blueprint is there. There's a book called I have it on my phone. I don't want to look it up while I'm talking to you. But it's basically, it talks about how the Jewish community, I referred somebody to this book, but it basically, the Jewish people, is a Jewish guy, and he's talking about why the Jewish people are so successful. He talks about it. He explains it, and he breaks it down. And it's because they prioritize their culture, and they prioritize business, they prioritize economics, they prioritize finance. This organization is built on the same principles. When we say black wallets matter, we're not saying that you need to spend your dollars in every case. We're saying maybe we withhold them from people who don't respect our patronage. Right, we're saying we pull them, and right, so if we have all these brothers and sisters that need jobs, we take that money and we invest into a major industry like manufacturing, buying grocery chains and supermarkets and things like that, getting our brothers and sisters into transportation, places where there's a need for a lot of labor, because that's what we need. And if we're able to just help those brothers and sisters have a better life, find opportunity. If we can create the infrastructure to do that, those brothers and sisters will become, they will feel indebted to us. They will feel like, okay, cool, you know what? I need to reach back and help another brother and sister. One of the biggest problems why many of our brothers and sisters don't help, like our celebrities and things, is because there's no organized way to help. There's no organized system. If you're a Jewish person and you want to help, all you have to do is just go and give money to your synagogue. The synagogue just distributes the money throughout the community. It gives them no interest loans. By the way, the book is called The Jewish Phenomenon. It just came to me, that book that I'm referring to. So you can look it up on Amazon. It's called The Jewish Phenomenon. But anyway, they have those systems set up. They have the organized structure. We do not, and we need to build it. We are asking you, if you're on a call and this is your first time, if you've never heard us speak and you've never seen us, you know, on social media or whatever, we are asking you to consider coming on board and helping us build that system, right? We want to start with 2,000 founding members. And the reason why is because at 2,000 founding members, with the membership dues that we are asking you to pledge, we can start and build our first business. We can start and build the first proof element to show the rest of the black community that a group of unrelated brothers and sisters can come together and work in harmony and create a system that's in benefit for us all. It is called selflessness. It is called benevolence. We need to, every single person on this call, we know our people. They got to see it first. They got to see it. There are some of us who are willing to step out on a limb. So we have 444 brothers and sisters who have stepped out on a limb and have united with us. We need 2,000. Our membership dues are $10 at the silver level, $25 at the gold level, and $50 at the platinum level. If we were to have, if you take the average of that, which is $28, and we have 2,000 founding members, that's going to give us like $56,000 or something like that a month. $56,000 continually to come in and build a business, sustain a business. If anyone here has started a business from scratch, you know that a business needs funding. It needs continual funding in order to build. Anytime you're trying to do something new, you need continuous funding because there's going to be missteps because you're trying to do something that you never did before. No, unless you've done it, unless you've already built it and have the blueprint and have every single thing in terms of the cost and every single thing else, you're going to make missteps. This organization itself, we're finding out now amongst ourselves. So like the members, we have like these engagement exercises and these training calls where we're bonding. Something that we found out is that we don't even know how to work together. As a people, we want to work together, but we don't know how that actually works, right? Because if I say something that offends you, normally our nature is, you know what, man, F that, F what you talking about, and I'm off. But what about the larger mission? The mission, the problem is still there. You, inside in your own way, you still want to work on the solution. But because you couldn't, because you disagree with me, because I said, you know, maybe kids shouldn't have, you know, short hair. You think they should have dreads. I think they shouldn't wear Jordans. You think they should wear Reeboks, whatever it is. You know, we can't agree on that. And so we abandon the mission. We need to put those differences aside, brothers and sisters. I am telling you, that is the only way we're going to work. If we put our differences aside and we put the mission at the forefront, the brothers and sisters that are part of this organization, we have committed to putting our differences aside and keeping the mission in front of us, keeping the task at hand. We first have to learn to work with one another. Then secondly, we have to build this system. We have to build the foundation of something to show everyone else. And then once all the parts are put together, then more brothers and sisters will come on board. And you know what will be good? Now it's easy for them to be involved and see the progress, right? So this organization, one of the other traits, the characteristics of someone who's a founding member of this organization is someone who wants self-improvement, who's on a journey of self-discovery. Right. So you may have it together in your personal life, but the bottom line is most black folks don't have like organizations that are moving forward for the whole collective. It's usually like a biker club or, you know, or maybe if you're in some fraternity or something like that, or a sorority or something like that. And then you guys have that mission. But we're talking about who's working in earnest for the rest of us. Who? Point me to them. And I don't want to hear nobody who's just talking about it. I'm talking about people who are actually doing something for the collective, because despite whatever political, sexual, theoretical, religious, whatever ideals you have, I know every single one of us can agree that our children need opportunities and our children need to be protected. Police can't be going upside their heads with no repercussions. I know we can all agree on that. I know we all can agree that we as a black people need an economic base. We need financial literacy information, and we need opportunities that are going to teach us and take us through entrepreneurship, provide the funding for the entrepreneurship if that's possible, have the built-in customer base so that our businesses can survive and thrive. Regardless of whatever your preferences or disagreements are, I'm 100% sure you can agree to that. And that's the type of system that we want to build. So usually I go and I start breaking down all the minutiae about the money and the this and the that. All of that information is available on our website on the frequently asked questions. You can also you can send me an email. You can respond to the email that you that I sent you in terms of the notification for this call, or you can call the phone number on the website. The website is blackwalletsmatter.org. If you like what you're hearing and it makes sense to you, you can go to the website. You can click the menu button up in the right-hand corner, and if you need to see the plan from soup to nuts, there's a link there. It says the blueprint. That blueprint video, it's about 36 minutes long. You can watch it. You can see how we go from point A to point Z. But if you're feeling what we're saying right now, we're here every week. We're not going anywhere. If you're feeling the momentum, you want to be a part of this, you want to be, help build, and I'll go down through some of the qualities that we're looking for in a founding member. But if that makes sense to you, when I read these qualities to you, if it makes sense to you, then you can just jump on board. You can become a member, $10 a month if that's what you're comfortable with, or $25 if you're, you know, like in the middle of the fence, $50 if you're fully committed. You can cancel your membership anytime you want. You can log in the members area and cancel, or you can call me and say, Brother Lou, there will be no hard feelings. No one's trying to run off with your money. The people who are here, who's been here for a year and all these multiple months or whatever, we're here every Thursday, unless it's a holiday, or and not even if I'm sick, because I've been sick and we've been doing these calls. So no one's going anywhere. So let me tell you the qualities that we are looking for in founding members. So we are looking for those who want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. We are looking for people who want to leave a legacy that they can be proud of. We're looking for those who feel good about helping others, because essentially that's what this is, right? So the things that we're building, we may not actually get to see the fruition of it. We may not even get to enjoy the fruits of it, but we are going to have to make peace with the fact that we at least built it. We at least started building it. We put it in place, right? And we will congratulate, appreciate, and acknowledge each other. We don't need that from everyone else. We need that from like-minded brothers and sisters. And the thing about that, right, in your heart, the feelings that you have, the commitment that you have about doing something like this, of this magnitude, only another brother or sister who's committed the same way can truly know how powerful that is, what that actually means. And for instance, so on one of our recent member calls, I mean, you got a bunch of people from all over the country bonding as if they're literally like cousins, and as if they knew each other for the longest, and it's an amazing feeling. And those are the kind of people we want, because we share with ourselves really, really, we're very open with a lot of our, you know, inner feelings. Let me just put it that way. Okay, so back to that. So then we are looking for brothers and sisters who are willing to trust others and who are trustworthy themselves. And the reason, again, like I said, because when we have our member calls, we're very open and honest with one another, and so it has to be a judgment-free zone. We're looking for those who who want a realistic solution to the problems we face in our community. So again, like I said, our solution, realistically, we're not going to go out there and miraculously change the mind of 42 million black men and women. What we're going to have to do is prioritize the babies. We're going to have to hire people who understand us culturally, right? And we're going to have to go back and start defining that. And I'll tell you something that we discovered in one of these calls. Most of us, the things that we have experienced here in this country, in terms of the slavery, the constant oppression, and all of this stuff, we are a new breed of black person. We're something totally new. And you know, you can look all across the world or whatever it is, but you're not going to find anything quite like black people here in America, because this country does something different to you, right? And we're strong enough to live and survive and thrive and defend ourselves against this system. But we need to do better. We need to do more. We know we want to do more, right? And so that's why I'm saying this is a realistic plan. Again, as I mentioned, so we're looking for those who are willing to set aside their personal differences, right, because they understand that the system of white supremacy is designed to oppress us all equally just by virtue of our skin. We're looking for those who understand that the problems we're trying to fix will require time and patience. You know, like I said, it's a multi-generational plan. And then we're looking for those who are willing to have an open mind about new solutions, because, you know, if repeating what we've done in the past, that just isn't going to work for us. And so what I mean specifically about having an open mind is being swift and adaptable. It's really understanding, you know, it's saying, you know what, we don't have all the answers. So if you notice, I'm saying a founding member, right? When I say founding member, I literally mean that. I mean you know, come on and sit down and help us shape policy, help us shape outlooks of what's going on, help us have a deeper understanding of our brothers and sisters and what's needed. What paths should we use for engagement and all these other different things? And so again, on our last call, it was one of our best calls, one of our last meetings. Our last meeting was one of the best meetings we ever had. We had two sisters who essentially shaped like the perspective of the group by contributing, by just sharing their truth. By them sharing their truth, everyone was able to have to come to like an aha moment. And so you have to be open-minded about that, right? So Sister Shauna and Sister Constance, so Sister Shauna, she's the one who said, realistically, we are something new. We are a new breed of people. Because if you go back in history and you look at it, people are shaped by their regions. I mean, physically shaped. Their heads and their noses and their faces and things. It's literally shaped by the region of the world that they're in. And we have undoubtedly taken on different type of physical changes being here in America. You also have cultural differences. There's no denying that we are culturally different from other places. Good, bad, or indifferent, we are something new. And then we had another sister, Sister Constance, and she came on and she said, that is what makes us black. That is, I mean, so we are from African descent, but we are black people here in America. We've been here for about 500 years. That's a long time to be someplace. That's a half a, that's five centuries. So that's a half a millennia. That's crazy. So we have to have an open mind about some of these things in order to move us forward as a people. So if any of these qualities, characteristics that I just outlined to you, if that sounds like you, if that makes sense to you, then we want to ask you to come on board, become a founding member, dip your toe in the water at whichever level you feel comfortable, and let's start making history. All right? So I am going to put the call in Q&A mode. So usually I take questions about the organization and things like that. But again, like I said, if you have anything that you want to address specifically about the organization, you can respond. You can just shoot me back an email to the notification that I sent you, or you can pick up the phone and call the organization. You can call tomorrow during business hours. We got a nice topic that we want to talk about tonight. And so I think we should just get to the getting. Okay, so before the call, Sister Rhonda said to me, she sent me a message, and it essentially was something from Dr. Claude Anderson where he was saying that integration hurt us. And there are some people who believe, that Martin Luther King, when he was fighting for civil rights, fighting for integration, towards the end he said, I led my people into a burning house. And so there are people who believe that integration has hurt us. I personally don't think that it hurt us. I do understand that we've been affected negatively, but I think that we would have missed more. I think some of the achievements, some of the things that we are able to do, some of the progress that we made or that we make as a collective, I don't think those things would have been available if we would have been secluded, segregated, isolated unto ourselves. Because you grow when you look at an ecosystem, when you look at all the components of the things that are going on. Now, if we were on our own little island somewhere, then, you know, we wouldn't have the demands of this country, right? But because we have the demands of this country, the economy, and all these other different things, I think that we needed integration in order to be to equip ourselves to be able to function. Specifically, I feel that we needed integration so that we can learn some of the skill sets that probably wouldn't have been available to us. So if you go back to the 50s and the 60s and all these other times when the segregation was in our face, right, there were certain industries we just were not allowed to get into, right? So we weren't in banking. I don't think we were in some some forms of manufacturing. We weren't in computing and all of these different things. And those were technologies, those were things that were changing and shifting with the world. So if we didn't have integration, then we wouldn't have people who know those skills. And if we don't have any, you know, so let's just say we really have to, you know, corral our wagons and call in, you know, call for all hands on deck, every black man and woman who needs to chip in. We have brothers and sisters who are now doctors and lawyers and scientists and mathematicians and computer people and all these other different things where, you know, if we were to stay segregated, we wouldn't have been able to do it ourselves. So if anyone wants to weigh in, do you think integration helped or hurt us? Press star 6 and let me know what you think. What you think. Okay, Sister Rhonda. Okay, Sister Toshiba. All right, Sister Rhonda.
Peace, brothers and sisters. I just have a statement to make about that. I'm with you partially. If we didn't have civil rights, I don't think we would have still be in chains, but I don't think it would have been easy for us to maneuver in the system, and like you say, the doctors, lawyers, and whatnot. But what I think with that civil rights, what happened, I think, because I wasn't in that part of the region, I lived in that region, but I was not a product of that region. And so when you can compare, you can kind of see what the possibility might have been. When a group of people are I want to say shunned or cast aside as if they're nothing, and their self-esteem is just shot down where they're not, and they attain something, sometimes when they grow to another level and keep growing and keep growing, they forget about the other ones behind. It's like that mentality that I got mine, you get yours. And that's what I think hurt us in the respect of not being able to see the bigger picture. Because I think if we had combined the civil rights with another component, resources or whatever, at the same time, if we had a vision to do that at the same time, we could have been farther along than we are today. But socially, when you're not included, sometimes when you get to that point, and I've seen people do it, they say, "Oh well, I'm a lawyer, I got mine, so you know, I feel bad for those people over there, but now you know they're gonna have to do what I did, whatever that is." So I'm just thinking, at the time, civil rights may have been good demographically for what they were doing, but demographically, it may not have been good for the entire country.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, sister. Appreciate your insight.
Thank you.
Okay. Sister Toshiba.
Hello?
Yes.
Hi. I don't think segregation was good for us. We've been pulled and separated apart for so long, I don't even think we know how to get together and help one another anymore. Without this. Honestly, we don't know how. It's just not that we can't. I don't think we really know how to. I mean, even going back from slavery until now, it's still like, you know, we was pulled apart. We were separated.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't know anything else. We couldn't get attached to anything. That's how we were trained. But I don't think it was good because I believe we would have learn how to get along. It has its good
points. Hold on, wait. You saying? Hold on, wait. Hold on. You're saying You're saying if segregation was left in place, it would have forced us to learn to get along, is what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think
okay.
we would have got along better. Okay. I really do.
Okay. So, all right, so the point that that Sister Rhonda was saying, and I guess you're saying the same thing, if I understand, well, my analysis or my understanding of what you guys are saying, I think it's cultural. I think the problem is it's not in our culture to, like, help and pull the other one up. That's just not a cultural thing, which is something, the reason why I think we need to prioritize that for the future generation. But it's like she said, they say, okay, cool, I got mine, you better get yours. The reason why people say that is because usually they've had no help on their way to getting theirs. The, you know, very few times the whole community was behind them. Very few times everybody was rooting for them and trying to push them. Sometimes people were knocking them down. If someone has a dream or a goal or an ambition outside of, you know, the status quo or whatever was acceptable for us at that time, they're like, oh, why are you dreaming? Oh, why are you doing this? Why are you thinking like that? And I've been the recipient of those types of comments at times in my life. So I think because that is our culture or part of our culture, I think that's why when those who do achieve usually tend to pull away from the rest. And so, you know, so with integration, maybe forcing us to get along. Segregation, sorry, not integrate. Because we had communities where, because there were no other people coming into our communities, we had grocers, we had, you know, my grandfather, he owned a bunch of different businesses in the community and things like that. And when I grew up, the vast majority of the businesses in my community were Black. So, I mean, I guess you have a valid point. Thank you, sister.
Mm-hmm.
Brother Leon, did integration hurt us or help us, brother?
All right, Brother Lou, I would say that I'm 50-50 on that, and I have to come from our origin. When we came over here as slaves, we were already separated because our families were separated, that type of thing. So it put us where we had a need to be together, but we didn't recognize that. So when integration came on, that we saw the big picture that everybody living better in the nice. Because we had a need to have. So the immigration, it hurt us. It helped us at one point because that's part of the process. And now we're at a point we recognize we're analyzing the process. The process was what we came over here as slaves, where everything was taken away from us. So in the system, we had now the process of learning the system. So now we have learned the system, and we see that integration has hurt us to a certain degree as far as not teaching us what cultural values are. So now we have evolved to be the teachers of cultural values. So the process was, we had to go through the process to get to this point. So I would say integration helped us to a point because it was the process. But it hurt us as far as teaching us cultural values on how to work, take advantage of immigration, okay? And in a capitalist society, that's a factor. Okay? So why? In a capitalist society, everything with food, clothing, shelter, you need money to do that. So if by immigrating, we had the education and the opportunity to do what? To get the money to take care of food, clothing, shelter. So I would say that integration, it helped us, but at one point it hurt us on our cultural values, on who we are, who we could be.
So let me ask you this, though, right? Whose responsibility is it to, because I'm listening to you and you saying that, you know, it didn't and they didn't teach us the culture. Whose responsibility is it to teach, you know, teach a person their culture?
Well, now you got to recognize what happened. Now, when it's our responsibility, but under the system we came under for so many years, we weren't even considered a person. So we was taught that we wasn't a person, you see? And then we're under a system where the language, we had to learn their language, we had to learn the ways to do their thing. So we had to evolve to the point to recognize that we were being beat down, okay? We knew the physical part of it, but we couldn't recognize the cultural defects because what we would be treated so bad, and that was by design. Okay, that's why I said the process. So we had to go through the process, and the end of the process was integration. To us at that point when integration was we reached for it, we thought that was the great thing, integration, because we saw things we couldn't get, we saw we could get that through integration. Education, living in better homes. We saw that because that's the dream. That's the system that we was under, and the people who had that, they got that. So we pushed toward that. So our responsibility for our culture value, they were kind of neglected because our thing was, I want to get a better house, I want to get a better job, I want to get a better education. So why? Because we didn't have anything, but we migrated toward what integration to give us everything we wanted. So that's why I said our integration was it helped us, but it didn't have a culture value. We didn't know that we had to have culture value. We had to evolve to that point. To verify that, we're on the call, and a lot of people not on the call because they hadn't evolved to the point to recognize that what our culture values. We need to take our own responsibility for our culture values. So it had not been for integration, we'd be having another conversation. Well, how can I get this money from my house? We'd be separate, and we could be lost a lot of, say, natural and financial things. We'd probably be further behind in those areas. So the process was, integration helped us to get through the process. Then some of us come to a point we recognize that, okay, we need to do better because integration got us to a point in the process. Now in the process, we have evolved to recognize that, okay, we missed some things. And that's where we're at there. So we had to go through integration. It helped us to get the houses, the jobs, the education, okay, at a faster rate. So it helped us in that area. But that's what at that point, it started being hurting us a little bit.
Okay. Gotcha, brother. Thank you so much for weighing in, Brother Leon.
Thank you so
much. Yes, sir. Thank you.
Brother Cujo. Lay it on the line, Brother Cujo.
Hey, how's it going? I personally think that integration hurt us more than it helped us.
Okay.
I mean, you can't deny that it has served some benefit because it gave people some jobs and it gave some people a shot at education. And some people use it today. A fair amount of people have used that to their advantage. But I just think that the fight should have been a little bit different because this is why you can't pass down the job. Opposed to giving us jobs and bussing us over to their schools, which is where the integration started out at, there was an agenda in place from the beginning. And that
right,
kind
so
of, the reason... Yeah, the reason why I say why I would say it was a disadvantage, because it didn't help us to be self-sufficient. We would have been able to help more people if we had had our own schools. And I think it was 1961 or whatever, when they had the affirmative action came into place. Like me and you was talking, he was like, that's pretty much a byproduct of integration. But the thing with that is to help people to get jobs. And while on the surface that seems like a good thing, mainly what it had to do with is with dealing with the government. And if we could have, it would have been better for us to have a fair part in government contracts. That way we could have been providing our own jobs and built self-sustaining entities opposed to a few people having a job.
I get you on that. All right, well, let me play devil's advocate. So prior to, right, because a lot of people say that, our own schools, our own this, our own that. Prior to integration, well, why weren't we doing that, right? I mean, so we had Black Wall Street, so we right, so because that's usually what everyone says. Oh, Black Wall Street, blah blah blah. Okay, cool. I understand. That was in the 20s. After Black Wall Street, we had other areas that were also prominent in affluent or whatever you want to call it. They had the money circulating within those communities. They had black communities but they did not do that. They didn't prioritize building their own schools. They didn't prioritize, you know, career and training and employment and all of these other different things. When segregation was full on, when you had no other choice to do it, you just had some men who were intrepid who said, I'm going to go out there and I'm going to do what I got to go do for my family, and I'm going to go, you know, either if I got to work two jobs, three jobs, that's what I'm going to do. If I got to go open up a supermarket or a store or whatever it is, then that's what I'm going to do. But why didn't, when we were segregated, why didn't that thought process kick in? Because it's hard, because if we weren't doing it before, we definitely not going to do it after, when there's so many other new distractions or opportunities. Let me put it that way, opportunities slash distractions. So I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Well, I hear you on that, but I beg to differ. I mean, like, one of the things that you just mentioned was, even when you were younger growing up, you saw a lot more black businesses and stuff like that. And even talking to my late grandfather, my late great grandfather, he was actually opposed to integration, because what he explained to me is that they had, they owned everything. They had their own doctors and all different type of professionals. I mean, one thing I think is good to keep in mind is that there's never been, in this country, there's never been a complete segregation. There's always been some part of, there's always been some part of our population that was well off. Even mm-hmm. when you listen to, what was that, E.B. Du Bois used to talk about the talented tenth. And so there was there's always been a segment of our population that has been well-to-do and would have been capable of getting these institutions and organizations started. But we were more or less blackballed. They said, no, we got the funding, but we're not going to spend it on, we're not going to give it to y'all.
Who said we have that, the funding?
The government. The government and
so now you're saying the government
ran the companies that were racist. I mean, it's a known fact that there was racism that exists in the government.
Right. But okay, you know what? We got a bunch of people in the queue, so we're not gonna go here. We're not gonna make this a personal conversation. Okay. All right, brother. Yeah. No. I hear you. But if we do have time, I want to come back to that. Because it was all political. Because it was political. The whole thing was political. But all right, cool. Thank you, brother.
All right, no doubt.
Sister Mai, before your phone gets cut off, before you drive through a mountain or something.
Thank you. Good evening, brothers and sisters. I was dropping the call, so I don't know if anyone said this or not, although I think not, because I heard you mention Black Wall Street. And my comment is that I believe it did us more harm than good, kind of echoing what I did here. But to add to that, the reason I think it did us more harm is because we were successful in, you know, the 20s in Black Wall Street, and you had Rosewood, and you did have your pockets, and even like Brother Cujo just mentioned, the talented tenth. There were people who, basically, when we did not have the opportunity to integrate, it caused us to be more entrepreneurs and create our own jobs, educate our own, you know, children. And the reason we did not, I mean, we no longer have Black Wall Street, you know, Little Africa, or those types of communities anymore. And the reason I believe they did put the drugs and the guns and all that into our neighborhoods to ensure we wouldn't have another one is because we're actually better and more creative, more resilient than I believe anybody else, but certainly more so than white people. That's my opinion. And that's why they bombed it, you know, and burned it and everything that we have every time we accomplish something, because they're jealous because we actually have more than they do. And the neighboring community, you know, obviously felt that way in Oklahoma, which is why they got rid of Black Wall Street. For them to have their own airports and movie theaters and everything, like, completely self-sufficient and were thriving, and it tells you that we didn't necessarily need them, need to be integrated. And I believe that had we been left alone, and I was thinking about this, like, well, they had airports, they had, you know, we had planes, so it's like, where were they going, with those planes? And I believe out of the country, and we're able to get resources. So if we weren't integrated here in America, I don't think that we had to be or needed to be, because I believe they were getting, you know, information and more, like, whether it's technology, education, or whatever, perhaps from other countries. But at least they had access to, so that we could teach ourselves. We could, you know, we had more writers writing our own books and telling our own stories. And I believe going over to Africa and finding out their history and whatever and teaching the different type, you know, our true history. But who knows? I mean, I wasn't there. I don't know exactly where they were going or, you know, how they were learning. But I do know that they were very, very successful. And I believe that's the reason they no longer exist. And that we have all these other political things that have come into play that have kept us from ever achieving to that level again. So I just think that it did us more harm than good, because I believe if we were left alone to achieve that, we would, and we would be just phenomenal, like, you know, the Jewish community and anybody else. I think we could have just been just so much better off, honestly. I think that access to the integration caused a lot of separation and division among us and led us to where we are today. Because we started, because of the brainwashing, basically we started thinking like them, talking about each other like them, thinking about ourselves the way they portrayed us and the images that they constantly put in front of us that does this psychological brainwashing to get us to see ourselves in a light that had we just been in our own communities amongst our own people, I don't believe we ever would have saw ourselves in that light. We didn't. I don't think we naturally saw ourselves as the underachievers, the illiterate, the thugs, and everything that over years has become the stereotype and the predominant imagery shown throughout the media that the African American person is, and we've internalized that over time as well, and trying so hard to get away from that stereotype or that the negative image, we try to assimilate even more so and gravitate to the Caucasian or, you know, whatever community so that we can say, well, I'm not like them. And we go so far, I think, as to deny our own people, not want to be around our people. I've been in so many situations where I've gotten a new job and walked in and another black person, maybe only one other black person would be there, and I'm thinking, oh, cool, I get somebody I can bond with, and they're looking at me, turning their nose up, don't want to speak, pissed off because there's another one, you know, in the company. It's like, it's so many just dynamics that I think integration has caused that has been to our detriment as a people. So that's my response.
Okay. I know a lot of people love to bring up Black Wall Street as our crowning achievement and things like that. Do you know how Black Wall Street got started?
I don't. I just know how it ended.
Right. Most people don't look at that. So I forgot the gentleman's name, but he actually made money in the oil field, in the oil industry, working with white men. And as he began going west or more west or wherever it was, actually, so he made some money and he was like, I'm going to get out of here, wherever he was with those white people. And as he was traveling down Greenwood, going through Oklahoma, going through Tulsa, as he's traveling in Greenwood, it was, you know, a basic stark place. And he was like, you know what? I'm going to plant a flag here. And he opened up like a boarding house, and I think it was like a slash brothel and like a juke joint or whatever else. And then basically the city grew around that. I think his name is something with an O, maybe Owen something or something like that. But that's how Black Wall Street actually came about, right? And so that man had a vision of from wherever else he left of what he was seeing. So I think I agree with you that modern black men, black women, we try to do some things that probably hurt us because we're emulating. But I don't think those men and women at that time, back at that time, I don't think they had those types of image problems. I don't think, I think common decency, right? And so the thing that we're really lacking as a collective is common courtesy and decency. And courtesy and decency was definitely something that was prevalent in the black community at the time.
Right, that's my point exactly. Had we not been integrated, supposedly, then we would not have had that. The imagery that's been put before us, because we would have been separated. We wouldn't have saw ourselves the way that we see ourselves now, the way they show us we are, because they hate the fact that we've integrated and want us to think negatively about ourselves. Well, if we weren't, I don't think we would have had that negative imagery even enter our psyche. That's my point. Nor would I think the drugs and the things that have destroyed our community even enter the community. Even in as late as the 60s, that's why, you know, we had organizations like Black Panther Party. They were self-policing, protecting the neighborhood for the most part, from the outsiders and from the drugs and from the things that destroyed our community because they saw what was destroying it. But when you don't have that self-protection or need to, so you think, then we're left to doing everything that they do, which is destroying ourselves and each other. We copy them to a fault.
Okay. All right, sis. Well, got a few more people in the queue, so
okay.
Thank you for weighing in so much, sister.
Thank you.
Okay. Sister Kim. Yes.
Hey, I'm sorry. It always goes kind of blank, and then I'm catching up. But good evening, Brother Lou and everyone. Oh, that was O.W. Burley, was his name.
Yeah, there you go. Okay, yep, I knew it was something with an O. I thought it was Owen, but go ahead.
In my opinion, I think it hurt a lot, and I guess living and learning and seeing a lot of things for myself. But my mom, I remember she went to a segregated school and listening to her talk about how, you know, it was separated back then and everything. And to me, it seemed like either way you go, it's set up by political, systematic, you know, oppression and stuff, regardless. That's through my eyes, that's just my opinion. For the simple fact to keep us separated. I think back then, during that time, there was more togetherness, and we're dealing with, just like we're dealing with the bunt end of our generation as far as when the crack came in, and back then when the father was taken out of the home and, you know, systematically set up to fail, you know, and listening. And I agree with what some of Sister Maya say and Cujo, Brother Cujo, because, you know, at that time, you know, there was a lot of pride. You know, we're self-sufficient people anyway, you know. It's all mainly us on here, and excuse me for what I'm about to say, but we'll find a way to niggery something out of anything, whether it's to the car, you know, anything. So we're self-sufficient in that way, and that's a threat to some people. And then when you have a time like Black Wall Street, the Black Panthers, and it's not so much as they were a threat because of the guns, it was so much of a threat as how these black folks come together to make these nutrition programs, to teach their kids, to show them that they have pride, that they come from somewhere, that they can be self-sufficient without the government or the quote-unquote white man's money. You know, that's just my opinion and my observation on that. So I think it did kind of hurt us in any way where affirmative action comes into play. That's only because
your phone is breaking up, sister.
Oh, I'm sorry. Where affirmative action comes into play. You know, that's because you got to allow and let so many of these. You know, a lot of us, we don't, I noticed me and my mom were talking the other day, and I was like, at a time I remember where politics bored me. But really, you better listen to, and we need to read and get an understanding of these law books and the laws and stuff, because that's really life. And that's how they've been beating us for so long, getting around, taking things away from us, as we were saying on the members call the other night. You know, it's no longer, when you say African American, of people, you know, nowadays, where you know it's black, you can't take nothing and from that other than that being black. But I know there's other people in the queue. I've said my piece.
Thank you so much. Thank you for weighing in.
All right, and I'm glad you're feeling better, Brother Lou. You sound a whole lot better.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
All right,
Brother Cha, you are next. Go, brother. You're live.
How's it going? After listening to everyone tonight, at first I was kind of 50-50 when we were talking earlier, because I was thinking perhaps we just needed, you know, more boundary respects and things of that nature post-integration. But from the sound of it, it sounds like perhaps integration has been more of an issue than a positive thing for us, considering as a collective it seems that we haven't grown stronger through adversities as we did in the past than we are now, just from that aspect alone.
Okay.
Any thoughts or?
It's your opinion. I'm just giving you the floor. You have the floor, brother. You know, how has it affected you personally? Like, you know, has anything that you've noticed personally in your life, in your family, or anything like that? Or, you know, are you just going with the flow?
Well, my situation is more of a special case, so I'm just kind of going with the flow.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. Yeah, and so, and then there are those that will have that. It's just, you know, there'll be unique situations where, you know, maybe you come from a family of means, and it's like it didn't matter what was going on because you have somebody in your family who's like, we're going to get ours anyway. So, you know.
Yeah, it's a matter of survival at that point.
Right. All right, cool, brother. Thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem.
Brother Leonard.
All right, I think Lou gave me his cold all the way from back east.
Oh, man.
Yeah, I got to blame
you. You got it now. You got it now.
Yeah, so peace to brothers and sisters. How's everybody doing this evening? I think the integration and the segregation, I'm on the fence 50-50 because my experience is a little different than how I see it. And this is the thing about these calls. We all share our different experiences, and then we find how different we are. So, but at the end, hopefully, we will design what we want Black Wallets Matter to be. And so I lived in L.A. until 1963. And then our parents moved us to Pasadena, which is Altadena. So I went to school in an integrated environment. But just like many of us, many African Americans started migrating to Pasadena. So you could say it was segregation, because what happened is when we went to school, we always respected each other. And I was just talking to my best friend and pastor today, and he was in the Air Force, a career. So he went in at 19 and he was out at 39. And when was the last time you seen two brothers do the dap?
Back in the day.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you don't see that now. And so these are the things that we somewhat have lost. How often collectively do we have dinner after church at home? And there's a big spread dinner at home. You don't see those things, so you start to ask yourself. So the call that we had the other day, it made me start thinking when we said we're new people. Well, you know, that's right, because once we were torn apart, our culture, what happened was we weren't taught a cultural collectivity, because the Koreans don't think twice about coming into our neighborhood and open up a shop, okay? The Arabs, they don't think twice about buying a gas station. They handle their business, and they'll be in anybody's neighborhood. But again, all you're going to see in that shop is Koreans, and all you're going to see in that gas station is Arabs. So we have to ask ourselves, what is it about us that alleviates us from being collective? And when you start thinking about it, well, it's just like baseball. If you say, well, give me a pick up the baseball bat, I don't know what to do with it. You know, well, nobody taught you. But we did have, back in the 60s, a lot of our parents teaching us. Education was a big deal back in the day. Okay, so when we turn around and look at what was going on in the 60s, and then you see what happened in the 70s, and where are we now? So do we have a collective right now? And the fact that we're talking about that, just as I mentioned before, we should be talking about business. But this is healthy for us, because it allows us, like you said, the founding members, to design, which ultimately is going to be a movement. Because when you have a movement, it's a body of people going in the same direction. Excuse me. And in the 60s, we were all oppressed the same way, not given opportunities, police brutality. Those were the two major things. Well, right now, we have a number of things, but we had a culture back then. Now, how are we going to reinvent ourselves? And that's the challenge, regardless whether segregation hurt us or not, because in some cases it gave us opportunities, but in other cases what happened? Once you got to where you got and you were doing well, you didn't reach back and open up a door. Some of us did and some of us didn't. So, for example, if you look at the old movies, the black and white movies, where you see Jack Benny, and I'm old enough to remember Rochester, okay? Rochester was the butler, okay? Everybody know who Aunt Jemima is, right? Okay, well, if you look at movies today, there are no black butlers. They're all Hispanic, okay? Or the maids are Hispanic. So you can see that we've evolved, but where? Did we evolve up or did we evolve down? And I think right now we have a very high rate of poverty among black people at this present time, and I think it's at an all-time high right now. And if you think about how much the average black family makes, I think, what is it, $14,000 a year or $17,000? It's some number low like that. How can you live on that kind of money? So anyway, I think this is a good conversation. Like I said, I think it helped us in some case, but it did hurt us in other cases, because when we were segregated, that's when we perform the most. We had everything to ourselves, and that's all I got.
Okay, cool. So one of the things that I want to say, I actually was having this conversation with someone earlier. So two points. So in terms of discussing the business, right? When business is a highly symbiotic type of organism, right? And you know that because you're in business. So you know
right.
Cooperation is working together. It's doing all of that. When you have people who have a difference of opinion for political, religious, and all these other different things, that causes friction, and getting into business with folks under those without resolving or having a system for managing those differences, it's problematic. And I know that
right.
because I'm currently in a business deal with someone where I knew there were going to be problems and we didn't resolve them. And so there's underlying tension in that business situation. And at any time, it can explode.
Right.
At any time. And it's a toxic situation. So because what we're trying to do is move forward in peace, move forward and be productive, right? So like I said earlier, I don't know if you were on the call, there's a lot of things that we're discovering along the way. When we initially came on these calls, right, so early in the year before you and Sister Maya came on board, that's what we came on the calls. That's what we were focusing on. We were talking about, let's get to the business, let's do this. Like I said, two things became apparent. One of the things is we couldn't agree on a lot of different things because of other differences. But then the other thing that I noticed is, just like you said, you know, you give someone a bat and they don't know what to do. Some of the businesses that we need to do, especially to employ hundreds and thousands of brothers and sisters, the vast majority of us, and I specifically, don't know how to run those kinds of businesses. So I have businesses, but I don't have any more than six people working for me. I have the largest amount of time I have people working for me is like on crews that, you know, work on a house or something for me,
mm-hmm,
or whatever it
mm-hmm.
is. And I'm only really dealing with the GC. He has the other people working under him. So when you start talking about an enterprise and an organization that requires hundreds, thousands of people, HR, you know, you got to deal with all the other different kind of nonsense, right? That's something that needs to be learned. And then those who work together or who say we come together to invest in a business like that, they need to understand that when you have all of those problems, that messes with the money. And that's why we need a flow, or we need to be able to sustain that. So I'm saying all this to say is, you know, we have a few people who don't have the extensive business experience to know what business entails. And so we have to learn that, and that's why we have to foster these bonds, and we have to foster trust, and then we have to do that, because when hiccups arise in business, as you know they normally do, we need
right.
to be able to stay together to weather the storm, because, you know, business
right.
will cause a lot of arguments. Somebody thinks we should be buying blue pens, somebody thinks we should be buying red pens. It's going to just be crazy. So that's just
and that's a good point that you bring up. But I'll say this. This is why other corporations that I work for throughout my career, they have what they have, SOB, Standing Operation Procedure, and they have a book. But before you get hired, generally you go through an interview process, and sometimes we have to have these conversations. So, for example, when I first started, my goal was to work with all these companies, and this is, you know, get their menu, get it locked, and go to a different company, and I only worked 2 years, right? Well, I tried to get a job after 5 years because I'd been to, you know, well, at least four or five different organizations, reached the top and wanted to move on. Well, what happened was, in one of these interviews, the guy said, "You got great experience, but you only stay 2 years. There's a pattern that you have. You don't have stability and what we're looking for." So that's something I learned. I didn't get the job. So from that point on, I made sure I stayed on the jobs at least 5 years. So there are things that when we go into business, we better have some training of some sort of where we've worked for corporate before, because as you're learning, and even myself, many times when we deal with ourselves, man, it's tough. And sometimes, not that we turn a blind eye, and you just mentioned it, you see it, but you're hoping that they'll change. And they don't. And then you can't be disappointed because you saw it in the very beginning. I think it's a song like Sly Stone said, people thinking they've been took just to realize they overlooked. So those are the type of things. But you're absolutely correct. And I think that those of us that are in a business of some sort, we all probably share the same opportunities and the same struggles. They may be a little different, But when we tie it in, it's usually the same struggle. But as you know and I know, we can't give up. We got to keep going as we're doing with Black Wall Lives Matter. We got to continue till we get to that 2,000 mark. But, yeah.
All right. Thank you so much, brother. And I hope you feel better,
right,
man.
No, oh, I will.
Man, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, thanks.
Just kicking my butt, man. All right, brother.
All right.
Next we have, I apologize for that, brother. Next we have Sister Shauna. Yes, sister.
Hey, Brother Lou.
Peace.
Brothers and sisters. So are we still on? Are you still with the question? Do we think?
Yes. Yes. Yes, ma'am.
All right. So I don't think segregation was the problem. I think, I mean, just listen to, and I just formulated this thought process just in hearing everybody speak. It sounds like segregation wasn't the problem. It sounds like there was no post-segregation plan.
So yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
Integration.
I'm sorry.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
A post integration plan. It's like, it's just like the whole journey of freedom that we've been through. You know, it's like, what do we do once we get here? We always had a plan. Get here, we got a plan for the next step, for the next step, and it's like we got to integration. And we just stopped planning. And then I think just human nature took over from that point. You know, what happens when you integrate or you take away the livelihood of a community? The men now have no jobs. The men lose their dignity, their respect. Now they leave the home. They leave the families. They get on drugs. You understand, it's like, the things that happen to the community, the loss of dignity, the loss of respect, the loss of jobs, the loss of the family nucleus, was all because I don't think anybody sat around and talked about, okay, we plan to get integrated. Do we understand what's going to happen to the economics of our community once we integrate? Do we realize that portions of our community are going to go here, go there? That's going to break up our family-owned businesses, which is going to break up the money. The barbershops are not going to thrive. They're going to go somewhere else. And, you know, our attorneys and doctors, they're going to go to Johns Hopkins now. They're not going to go and stay within the community because now, you know, we're all broken up. So my observation is, you know, segregation wasn't the problem. It was the post-segregation plan. I also think, and I know this is not popular, probably going to piss some people off, is I really didn't like affirmative action as a part of a civil rights plan. Because to me, affirmative action was kind of like the red, you know, the bright, fair-skinned slave being in the house and the dark-skinned slave being out in the field, and one looking out on the other and being given or feeling like they've given some privilege because of what they look like and because they're in a specific place. I think affirmative action caused a rift, not just because, you know, other people felt some kind of way about it, but we felt some kind of way about it. You know, I think because it's kind of like, the best way I know how to explain it, it's kind of like when I was in the Marine Corps, most of the male Marines hated the female Marines because they were given a double standard. Because the female Marines they didn't have to run the 3 miles to qualify. They had to do a mile and a half. They weren't required to do the pull-ups. They could do the chain drop. It's like the double standard in the fight for whatever it is that you have to do. If we say we want equal, I think we should have got out there and stood on our own 2 feet, no matter how hard it is, and fight for the equality on our own 2 feet and on our own stance, however way we needed it. And I think that would have balanced out the integration, because we would have been required to still stay in the community and do what we needed to do. We wouldn't have been able to just jump, you know, clear across the other side of town or whatever, because affirmative action did help with the, you know, all of the problems that integration caused as well. So that's my thought.
Well, I was having this conversation with Brother Cujo the other day, and I was telling him, you know, pretty much, I guess this is why, like, I have my stance or whatever it is. My family, I am a beneficiary of affirmative action, because I remember when this stuff kicked in, and I share with everyone, you know, how I grew up, you know, living in the projects, big family, my grandmother, grandfather, 15 kids, all of us living in the same, like, apartment and all of this. When affirmative action, when it started kicking in and when those opportunities start coming down, my father's brothers and sisters, my aunts and uncles on my father's side, they're a little bit older than my mother's side of the family. And they're a little bit, actually, I can't even say they're more educated, but they're a little bit more conservative. So they weren't really caught up in that New York street life, because they were from down south and they came, and my grandfather ran a tight ship over there. And so when those jobs, them city jobs and all that stuff start opening up, they start jumping on them. And I remember them coming over. Well, I remember my father and my Uncle Nat coming over to my grandmother's house where there's all these kids. And all the kids that were in there that were 18 and older were sitting. So my grandmother had a table that, you know, that you only sit at it at Thanksgiving. You couldn't go in there. I remember them in there having all those people filling out applications for different city jobs, my mother included, my mothers, my aunts, uncles, all of that on my from my father's side, helping my mother's side. My mother's side, they're living in the projects. Like I said, my grandfather, he had different businesses, but the boys are not really helping out as best as they should. And they had no special skills, no special education, no special anything. And they were able to take advantage of that. So I hear what you're saying. It's like, oh, okay, you know, show favor, this, that, third. My mother's side of the family had no favor. There was no favor. That was just hard work. The only thing was my father's side of the family came over and they brought a bunch of applications. It was like, listen, you guys need to start trying to get these city jobs. You need to start trying to work for transit, work for NYPD, work for corrections, work for whoever. Right. And that's what they did. And that literally changed the face, the fortune and the outlook of my family. I have a firmly middle class family. Like, it's few people in my family that are like at the poverty level. I have a middle class black family now. And we were definitely not that in the 70s. And it's due to affirmative action. So what I'm saying is, Within that time, my grandmother and my grandfather instilled strong family values in us, in all of us. So at any given time, any aunt, any uncle can go to somebody's house, sit there, start laughing, joking, playing, get drunk, and just fall out on the couch and don't leave till 5 days later if they don't need to. Because those are the values, those are the cultures. That's the culture that my grandmother and my grandfather instilled in us. They took responsibility for instilling those family values in us. We're still in the same environment where, you know, it was heroin at that time, where, you know, people shooting up in the hallways and all that. And then when crack came, and I had like two uncles that was running around smoking crack, three uncles running around smoking crack and stuff like that. But because of the family bond, because of the strength, they were able to get off, and they're now productive members of society, and they're doing what they're doing, and the family propped them up and boosted them up. The family refused to let them go, to let them fall to the wayside. That was a conscious decision on my grandmother and grandfather's part to instill those values. And all I'm saying is, if we as a collective would have done this. And my grandmother and grandfather are not educated people. They're from down south. They were sharecroppers and stuff like that. If the rest of the community would have embraced that, if that would have been part of our culture, I don't think it would even be a difference of whether it was integration, segregation, or whatever, because everybody would have been on code anyway. That's what it would do.
I agree. But like I say, it human nature, lack of will, you know, your family, and I can't even say that's in my family. You know, what you've described, you know, I think, you know, it's just that, I don't know, we lost that. And I'm just talking from a logical human standpoint.
This is logic. I agree with you that there wasn't a post.
I'm just basing it off of what I've seen. That's why I started with post integration, because post integration is where we lost the family. You know, that's where all of the dignity, the respect, all of that, and it started with the no jobs. It's like the damage started then. Affirmative action came later. You know, it's like something needed to happen right when integration happened. There needed to be a plan in place to deal with the people and what they do next. You know, what do we do now? You know, no matter what happens, we're going to stay in our communities and we're going to do this. We're going to take advantage. We're going to stay a nucleus. It's like we didn't have that conversation as a collective. We was just happy to be with them.
No, and I am 100% agreeing with you. And so that's why I'm saying, we're saying the same thing. That's why I'm saying with you that it's not the integration, segregation, or whatever it is. We didn't have, like Brother Leonard always says, a cultural collectivity. We didn't have the code embedded in our DNA. And so I don't think we should even be, you know, sitting here saying, it's basically saying, like, you give someone some money, they say they want to start a business, and you just give them the money to start the business. You don't ask them what kind of business. You don't do none of that.
Right.
You just give them the money, and then they go ahead and they fall on their face. Right? They didn't take advantage of the opportunity. That's all that is. They didn't take care because they didn't have the plan, and you just were like, well, they should know better because they're going into that. So I am just saying that some of the negative things, I'm not saying about the crack. I'm not saying about, you know, how we were targeted as a community and all of that stuff. All I'm saying is that at like some point, we're going to have to say, okay, we're going to have to accept the responsibility. And the reason why I say that is because people who were closer to slavery, people in the 20s, were able to get it together. They were able to figure it out and get it together. And so I think that though I think us 80s, 90s, 2000s and beyond, I think that we have the tools, the knowledge, the education and everything else to be able to turn this thing around. I don't think we need to be, using past experiences as a crutch anymore. That's just my personal thing.
I 100%, 1,000% wholeheartedly agree. I think in 2018, and I tell my children that in 2018, there is nobody hindering you, stopping you, or preventing you from doing anything. So I wholeheartedly agree with you, brother. Thank you. Thank you for your time. I know you got other people in your queue.
Okay. Well, and I'm just letting you know. So I'm gonna tell you what happened because I'm noticed this, and this is black folks. Everybody pay attention. You can be saying the same thing, but because we're so passionate with how we express what we're saying, we think we're saying it sounds like we're on opposite sides of the fence.
Oh no, no, I don't think you're disagreeing with me.
Oh, okay. Because I just wanted to clarify.
No,
I'm agreeing.
No.
Yeah, okay. All right.
No, this is a normal conversation you and I have, right? We talk all the time.
Yeah.
No.
Okay.
And if there was a misunderstanding about any other caller, no, I'm hearing you agree with me, and I agree with you too.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I'm just saying it from a different perspective. That's all.
No. Okay. All right. Great. Okay. Cool. I don't want to lose a friend. So.
Okay.
All right, bro.
All right.
Sister Ma.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Hey. Yes, I can.
Okay. So I wanted to respond to what you mentioned about us not being able to work together and having the difference of opinions in business. But you mentioned when you at the onset of that part, that segment, how you had like religious differences or whatever, and it causes you not to be able to work together. I think that is something that the corporate America knows all too well, and that's why, and even the churches, why they have these rules basically that tell you, you know, don't discuss religion, politics, and all that stuff like on the workforce, because they don't want their productivity to be hampered as a result of your personal opinions and beliefs. And I think that as we're building this organization, that's why I like the fact that you say that when there's a members and non-members call or whatever, that you make it clear up front that we're not going to discuss, you know, sexual preference, politics, and all of that, because it's the same, you know, for the same reason. So I think that if we just keep that in mind at the forefront, and basically we just have, you know, standard codes of operating procedures, period. And then I also believe that we should implement personality tests as people are going, or as if they're like wanting to be in a leadership role or have an integral part in one of the resource centers or whatever, that everybody, it's like, you know, job application. We just have to be professional and conduct ourselves in a professional manner in the ways that have been proven tried and true. Yes, we are different people, and we are creating a new culture and learning to be culturally collective and to work together. Again, we don't need to reinvent the wheel, you know, when there are tried and true methods. And I agree that that's a great book, a great read, The Jewish Phenomenal. The Seven Steps is plain and clear, you know, right there. So we have a lot of roadmaps that have been laid before us that we just have to follow. And I think that we're not above, you know, implementing, taking the good things that have been, you know, proven to work and successful from other people, and, you know, take the good, leave the bad, whatever doesn't work or whatever doesn't fit into our organization. But I think that we should definitely have some rules set in place to prevent a lot of that, you know, the disagreements from causing our organization to fall apart. And I think that that's another reason that we are so divided, is because along with the with integration came the opportunity to, you know, like all these other movements start happening, from, you know, women's lib, the LGBT, it wasn't called that back then, whatever, everybody's coming out of the closet, gay rights or whatever, animal rights, all these other things spawned, women's rights, you know, all these things spawned out after civil rights came out and was quote-unquote successful, then immediately people started saying, oh, well, you know, I'm interested in this, I'm interested in that, I'm interested in this. And I think that we never really truly achieved our civil rights as Black people. And I think that speaks to, you know, some of what Sister, is it Shauna or Rhonda, who was just speaking before me, was saying about there not being a plan. Is it Shauna?
That was Sister Shauna, yeah.
Yeah, about there not being a plan, because we really never, in my opinion, truly got the civil rights that we were fighting for, the Dr. King and, you know, the vision that he saw. Yes, integration was one of them, but it was only, I believe, as it related to opportunities, having equal opportunities to education, employment, and the types of things that, you know, basic human rights that we had been denied prior to that. But I think that we never really achieved, like, we never got a 40 acres and a mule, right? Never got truly integrated into the fabric to where we were on equal footing. And because it was like we saw a little bit of success, then we forgot the bigger goal as a collective. We started separating like she said, leaving the community, and we started getting too integrated, I feel, into other people's causes, and further divided us, or it caused us to be weaker because there were fewer of us, I believe, still wanting to fight for civil rights, because now we had women that were like, oh, well, I'm a woman, I'm going to go fight for, you know, say we had 100 people, just for example, say it was only 100 people that were fighting for civil rights. And once that supposedly happened, now you can be integrated with these other groups, and now you have animal rights. So say 20 people say, oh, I love animals, I want to fight for animal rights, I believe in, you know, cruelty to animals, no more fox mink coats, whatever. And then you have, you know, then the gay people started coming out of the closet, and so, oh, well, 25 of those black people are gay. And so they decide they want to go and fight for, you know, gay rights. You know, right, wrong, or indifferent. I'm just giving examples. And then say, you know, another 25 of those were women. And they go, oh, women's rights. Well, yeah, we want the opportunity to make equal pay, blah, 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 you know, as well. So now out of your 100 people, you only have, what is that, 30 people left that are still fighting for civil rights? You know what I mean?
I get it. Everything that you're saying is exact. It falls back to what I'm saying in terms of we needed to take self-responsibility and be accountable, right? Because what happened was the reality happened was when all those other groups were sitting on the sidelines and it was like, huh, these black folks are really raising hell. They really getting things done. Oh, wait a minute. Right. They got laws on the books. They got, you know, right, addendums made to revisions, made to amendments and things like that. Huh, let me read this. And they started using those same exact laws that were put on the books for us to do this thing, right, and they're winning. And that was the thing that I told you. That's what I told Sister Rhonda earlier on the call when she mentioned it to me. I said, no, because I said, I don't think it was a bad thing. I don't think it hurt us because we're watching other people use the same exact strategies, the same exact things, and they're winning. They're winning with them. The onus is on us to use what's there to our betterment, to our liberation. And I know that and this is why you keep hearing me, you know, specifically on this call, right? So I'm not saying that it wasn't the integration, segregation, what it is. It's a lack of the culture. It's a lack of us having our act together is what actually caused the problem. And I choose to say that I think we need to just accept that responsibility. We can't say, oh, they did this, they did that, and that's the reason why we're like that. We can't say
right.
that. Because,
I was going to say, I just think that going forward, because, you know, now we have that learned history, you know, from those experiences, I think that going forward with this organization, that anybody that joins, you know, we really need to make sure that everybody's on one accord and that this becomes a priority, that basically they were they are committed to the next generation, like you said, basically retraining, you know, our children and making them a priority over our differences, over our past experiences, over, you know, whatever that might keep us separated, even over, you know, before, you know, whatever, their religion, their gender, their whatever, you know, put, like, just if that's what you want to be your priority, you know, if you want to fight for women's rights, then this isn't the group for you. This is my opinion. You know what I mean? We just need people to be committed to one focus and to just be determined and dogmatic to not be swayed and not get off your agenda until the things that we want to accomplish are completely 100% accomplished. And like you said, that's going to take generations, and some of us may not even be here. But I think we need to build a strong enough foundation that the next generation gets it and they won't be hoodwinked. They won't be pulled off the agenda, you know, and like I said, hoodwinked and just, you know, pulled aside to where they really still aren't. So we end up, you know, they end up back where we are right now. And they won't be having this conversation 20 years from now.
Okay. All right, so we got a few more people in the queue. Okay, Brother Rashid. How you been, brother?
Fine, sir. How about yourself?
Hey, man. You know, I'm still here, brother. Still here.
I know. That's why I really called in, man, just to touch base with you. Let them know I've been hearing you here and there. I ain't forgot about you. I kind of surmised, so I just jumped in a little while ago. I've been jumping around from different other ones. So much has been going on, and I've encouraged you still hanging in there, because like I tell people, this ain't no stunt, man. As they say, quitting is not even an option. There's so much going on out here on the West Coast. I wish some of y'all could be out here Saturday. You got a young lady, she's presenting her book, Busy Bee, and Lemonade, and a few other things going on. But I heard the sister speaking on several things. And I just want to say this quick and you know, get on, unless somebody want to entertain some questions or some other things. Good evening, family, everybody. I'm Rashid Jordan. Brandon, I mean, we spoke. What we're speaking about, and I hear you, but Brother Elhaj Malik Shabazz, Malcolm as we know him as, summed it up. It's about human rights, first and foremost. Human rights. And we are the tone setters for human rights all across the planet, African peoples, as I choose to call myself. And when we can first start charity at home, then abroad. So we got to first help ourselves. Like Paul said, we can't put this on nobody but us. We got to take this responsibility to the next level. And I am so encouraged and happy to know so many of the young folks, like Brad and all of you out there, family, that are coming along and understand that y'all got to take it to the next level in an organized, intelligent, structured way. We can disagree, but we can't become disagreeable. Divide and conquer has been the oldest game in the world, and we've been falling for it time and time and time again. You ain't going to agree with everything I think. I ain't going to agree with everything you think. Anytime you find two people agreeing on everything, only one person is doing the thinking. But we must be able to disagree and not become disagreeable. I love all of y'all. Keep on keeping on. You don't hear from me every week. Whatever. My daughter, she has her blog show. Different other sisters, brothers, they got shows. And most of these are young people. I'm so proud of y'all. I tell them, I came up, we had a few radio stations, especially back there on the East Coast. I come from the East Coast. I can tell you, the few disc jockeys that had the nerve to say certain things, but we understand in retrospect. They had to say what they were being paid to say. I mean, if you come to work for me, I'm in the construction business. Now, you can't come changing my construction business. You go find your own, and that's how that thing went. That's in business, we understand. Most of us in business, hey, we understand how the thing works. Now, you know, it is simple, really, because everything is really simple when we boil it down. The golden rule, right? Those who go make the rules. You know, if you ain't got no money, people ain't really trying to hear you. So we have to come up, like Brother said, our own responsibility. We ain't hating on nobody else, but charity starts at home. I mean, I look stupid trying to help Asian people, Chinese people, or anybody else. And boy, he's struggling with his program, and I ain't calling at least once a year. So don't even call him. I ain't forgot about you, bro. I got to get my secretary to see you today. Yeah, I've been doing some other things, but I ain't forgot about you on that note. Because I'm not even a member technically, but when I put my word out there, I know it's going to be done. Because I'm like this. I'm slow, but I'm sure. Trust me. I say what I mean what I say. It may take me a while, but if I tell you something, you can take it to the bank. Anybody want to ask me something or say something or anything before I go?
No, well, they're in the more people in the queue, so.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Brad, keep on keeping house pops, man. Everybody all right?
Yeah, everyone's good, brother. Everyone's good.
Okay. Take me your thing again so I can get my secretary to do that for you. You know what I mean?
All right, just send me
an email. Yeah, I thought you had the thing because I've been around. I said, man, I got to do that app. So what's been happening up there? You know, tell me some stuff.
No, we can't have a personal conversation right now.
Oh, okay, gotcha. Call me later, I'll call you. Okay.
All right.
Back with you later.
Yep, bye. Sister Rhonda and this Brother Cujo, and then we're going to shut it down. Go ahead, Sister Rhonda.
Yeah, I'm not going to take long. It's that hour. I'd just like to agree with what Sister Shauna said. And it's very, 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 very important that we know the next step. And on that, I'm going to say why I'm saying that is because we know everything what happened to us in this country right here, black people. And if that man that started the Black Wall Street, if he could have implemented that throughout this country, those other people wasn't going to let that happen. That was a successful something that those other people wasn't going to let happen, for one, because they were here trying to find their way also. The other thing is that since regardless of that, now we're in 2018 and we have different dynamics with the system integration versus the social integration. We're going to have these other people that are coming. I have nothing against other people coming or whatever, but I think it's well beyond time that we had our place here. We've been here so long and we've been denied. Refugees are coming. The next step, they're looking out for those people that's coming here because they see them as an opportunity also. And if we keep delaying thinking about, oh, what we got to do, we should have to at least be on the page with what is the possibility of something happening next that we can kind of defer and keep building Black Wallace Matter.
Absolutely. All right. Thank you, sister. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Brother Cujo. And then we're going to end the call. Brother Cujo.
All right, I'm going to be brief. I just want to say that within this organization, we have a plan. And the plan is pretty extensive, and we're going to continue to develop it. And it's going to work. Because to a degree, we're open-minded, and we consider what roadblocks and obstacles that we may encounter along the way. We got enough in history that shows us mistakes that have been made, and one thing that's a key factor, which I believe, like Sister Shauna said, is having that plan. They didn't have a plan after integration, and I think what's a perfect example of that is like that Montgomery bus boycott. You know, black people accounted for 75% of the patrons. How did they end up not running the bus company?
Because they didn't think about the business side of it, and that right there is also part of the culture. It's something that we need to, you know, we're saying okay, we're being
well,
all.
I would like to jump in and say that was a part of the culture. But we redefining how that works. And I think that's why we will have greater success going forward because of meetings like this and because of the way we're defining how we're going to work together. And also, I like to say what I noticed is that tonight, everybody was virtually saying, pretty much saying the same thing. We might have a different little perspectives about it, perspective, because as black people, we love our individuality. But what's more important, which I think we can all agree with, is our collectivity, the cultural collectivity. So
I'll tell you what realization that I came to. We're really at some point in time as an organization, well, we're doing it now with Brother George with these engagement series, but at some point we're actually going to have to sit down and start documenting what the new culture is and the fail safes and the, you know, the code of conduct and all of that. We're going to have to accept the responsibility for that and offer that to any brother and sister who would be open to embracing it. But I think at some point in time, that I think a document or something is going to have to be constructed. So it's like, you know, if you're going to be upset about something that's going on in, you know, society, instead of going out there marching and protesting for the sake of marching and protesting, go out there and have a plan of how you can make an economic impact. Because, I mean, that's essentially what this whole thing about. So, I mean, if you look at modern-day marches and modern-day protests, it's pretty much the same thing like what we're talking about. You go there, you raise hell, but then I'm just like, okay, and then now what's next? What was the plan? Like, what are you actually changing? And I think that we need to get really serious about change. I think we need to get serious and strategic about the things that we're doing, and the energy that people have, it needs to be harnessed and collected, and it needs to be directed a very, very focused, you know, in a focused manner. And so, you know, at some point in time, you know, I wouldn't even presume that I would know what all of that would entail. I just know that that's something that needs to be done. There needs to be a plan. And I think that we need to prioritize economic plans and a self-sustaining economic plan, right? Because right. When we go and we start building these economic beachheads and fortifying ourselves through finance and through the money system and all of this other stuff, that's going to make us unstoppable. And especially right now is the best time to do it in history because, you know, America is at war with itself. You got the haves and the have-nots. Everyone is just at war with themselves. So I think right now would be our best opportunity to do that.
I mean, so I think that totally, and we do have the blueprint to be able to flesh things out as far as how we're going to operate and actually position ourselves in society. But as far as building our culture and the protocol that we'll operate off of, and even dealing with each other and defining the culture of the companies that will arise through this organization, I think that's we fastly approaching that through the members meeting, and I'm kind of seeing the direction that it's kind of pushing us toward, which is solidifying the culture.
I agree.
I'm appreciative of that.
All right, brother. All right, and so do you have anything else? If not, we're going to shut this one down.
No, everybody have a good night. I enjoyed y'all.
Okay, great. Thank you, brother, for weighing in. And brothers and sisters, I want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. One last time, if you enjoyed this conversation, if you like what this organization is about, then again, we want to invite you to come on board and help us build this system, build this culture, define this culture, shape what it is that we need to be doing as brothers and sisters, black men and women here in America. All right, so you can go to the website, that's blackwalletsmatter.org. You can click the menu button, you can look at the blueprint, you can become a member, you can check out our blog, Food for Thought, you can check out all these different things. And if you have any other kind of questions, we have a FAQs, frequently asked questions, you can look at that on the website. And if there's anything that you want to ask me specifically, then you can just respond to the email that I sent you tonight, and we can begin the dialogue there. All right, so have a good night, brothers and sisters.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Peace and blessings, bro. Stay up. Watch your back.
It's been a pleasure.